The Shadowy Horses, written by Susanna Kearsley and read by Sally Armstrong.
I hear the shadowy horses, their long manes ashake, their hoofs heavy with tumult, their eyes glimmering white. O vanity of sleep, hope, dream, endless desire, the horses of disaster plunge in the heavy clay. Beloved, let your eyes half close and your heart beat over my heart, and your hair fall over my breast, drowning love's lonely hour in deep twilight of rest, and hiding their tossing manes and their tumultuous feet. W.B. Yeats, he bids his beloved be at peace. First Horse. That delirious man, whose fancy fuses old and new, and flashes into false and true, and mingles all. Tennyson, In Memoriam, 16. Chapter 1. The bus had no business stopping where it did. We should have gone straight on across the Coldingham Moor, with Dunbar to the back of us, and the English border drawing ever nearer. But instead we stopped, and the shaggy-faced cattle that lifted their heads on the far side of the fence appeared to share my surprise when the driver cut the engine to an idle. A fierce blast of wind rocked the little 10-seater bus on its tyres and drove a splattering of cold spring rain against the driver's windscreen, but he took no notice. He shook out a well-thumbed newspaper and settled back, humming tunelessly to himself. Curious, I shifted in my seat to peer out my own fogging window. There seemed, at first glance, nothing to stop for, only the cattle and a few uninterested sheep picking their way across a ragged landscape that was turning green reluctantly, as if someone had told it only yesterday that spring had come. Beyond the moor, lost somewhere in the impenetrable mist, rose the wild romantic Lammermuir Hills I'd read about as a child, and in the opposite direction, although I couldn't see it either, the cold North Sea bit deep into the coastal line of cliffs. The wind struck again broadside, and the little bus shuddered. I sighed and watched my breath condense upon the chattering window glass. Impulsiveness, my mother always said, was one of my worst flaws, second only to my habit of speaking to strangers. After 29 years, I'd grown accustomed to her heavy sighs and shaking head, and to her firm conviction I'd end up a sad statistic on the nightly news. But now, as I squinted out at the bleak, unwelcoming scenery, I grudgingly admitted that my mother had a point. It had been impulse, after all, that had brought me from my London flat to Scotland in the first place. Impulse and the slick, persuasive writing style of Adrian Sutton Clark. He knew me too well, did Adrian, and he had phrased his summons craftily, his promise of the perfect job, set like a jewel at the centre of a long letter that was so deliciously mysterious, so full of hints of grand adventure, that I couldn't possibly resist it. Adrian, for all his faults, had rarely steered me wrong, and if today was anything to go by, I decided he hadn't been lying about the adventure. Not that one could really blame British Rail for what had happened. My train had certainly set out from King's Cross cheerily enough, and even after we'd spent 20 minutes on a siding, waiting for a points failure to be corrected, the engine had pushed ahead with vigour, determined to make up time. It was only after our second delay north of Darlington, because of sheep on the line, that the train had begun to show signs of weariness, creaking and rolling from side to side in a rocking motion that lulled me instantly to sleep.